we're recording. All right. Hey, everybody. It's a very somber, very serious episode of Webcomics Weekly. We're short Chris tonight. Little disclosure here. Brad, Chris, and I Friday evening decided to talk about a couple of subjects, one of them being the Orphan Works Act that is kind of a buzz now in our community. And we groped around in the dark like blind children. And after listening to the podcast back before posting it, I thought, in good faith, I just couldn't post it, mostly because I sound like a complete idiot. So I did some more research, and I have a better understanding of it. I think all three of us do, and we wanted to kind of retackle the subject in a more informed way so that we could maybe help you guys understand it better as well. So with me tonight, Dave Kellett, SheldonComics.com. Maybe.
This is a somber podcast.
Are you there?
Hello? Yes? What? No?
Also with me, I'll make it upbeat. Also with me, possibly in jeopardy of losing all of his copyrights, Brad Geiger, Evil Inc. or evil-comic.com.
Hello.
Dave, how goes your book stuff?
It is good. I am, with the kind hand of Brad Geiger, I'm redoing all of my files so to fit the format of a completely different printer in a completely different country. So all is going well. I'm enjoying the process. That I say that with a sardonic smile.
You lie, sir. You lie.
I lie like a dog in heat, but I'm almost done. I'm almost done.
Hope you both had a great Father's Day.
Yeah.
Right?
I am wearing the smartest looking Godzilla T-shirt in the whole city of Philadelphia, courtesy of my sons.
What does it say?
It's a circular logo, and it says Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
That is awesome.
And it's
yes,
really nice because if I
that
wear
is
it,
awesome.
Well, yeah, because if I wear it underneath an Oxford shirt, like I often do at work, and I leave the first couple of buttons open, his eye kind of peers out from the shirt, so it's really kind of neat.
You have a gamma radiated monster in your pocket there, Brad. I thought you were going to tell me that the shirt said that my dad can draw Godzilla better than your dad. Dave, it's your very first Father's Day ever.
Very first Father's Day ever, and I.
What did she get you?
Unfortunately, she did not get me anything. I'm really upset with her. Couldn't even get down to Target. I'm really mad. What do you do? How many ways can you leave a list around for an 11-week-old to find?
You dropped all the hints.
I dropped all the hints. I did. I went through all the formalities of fatherhood. No, she got me. She is doing this now, which is awesome. She is singing along with me as I am changing her diaper or helping to feed her or anything. And it is awesome. It is awesome to have a child sing along with you. This is an example. Like, I will sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow and hold the notes. I'll be like, somewhere, and hold it. And she'll go, ah. It is awesome. So that's what
did you ever consider doing that baby sign language thing?
You know, my wife is trying that. I kind of don't think it works, but my wife is trying it, which I think is
it works, Dave.
It's kind of
my brother, his niece knows it. She's a year, and she knows all kinds of different things. I think the biggest hurdle is that the adults have to learn it in order to teach it.
Yeah.
It's going to be easy for the kid to learn it. It's kind of difficult for the adults to learn it.
We started with really good intentions, and then it was just like there was better stuff to do. I was like, I don't think this is going to work.
You know what's funny, Brad? I got the book from the library, or we got the book from the library, rather, and you know, it starts off really simple. It's like milk, tired, you know, these very simple sort of hand signals. And then it's like, I can't get my router to work. And that is really complicated stuff for a baby to learn. And I got to say, the hand signals for that, you might as well just teach her to say, I can't get my router to work, because it's a complicated cornucopia of dancing and movement. And
is it like the bees that come back and do a dance to tell the other bees where the honey
bees,
is?
Bees, yes. What a great obscure reference. Yes, it is like bees. That's awesome.
We got my father European adapter for his iPod because he's taking a trip to Germany and he wants to make sure he can charge his iPod when he is away. And I guess that the adapter, the kit for it from Apple comes with adapters for everywhere. And he's like a little kid, man. He could not resist reaching in the box before paying attention, and he mixed up the adapters. And we couldn't figure out which one was for Korea, which one was for Germany. And we had to kind of look it up in the manual. But the funny thing is that when he was done with it, he's like, "Thanks, guys. This is a really thoughtful gift. Ooh, what's this? This is a nice bag." And I thought maybe he was talking about, one of my stepmom's bags or something. He was talking about the Apple bag. Talking about
just the plastic bag.
Yeah, you know the plastic bag that you kind of wear as a backpack?
Yes.
Yeah, he's like,
Scott, you know what that is? That's a human life coming full circle. Because you know how you give a kid a toy and they're more excited about the box than they are about the toy?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Now coming full circle.
He said, "Oh, I'm bringing this to Germany because you know when you travel, son, and you pick up knickknacks along the way, they give you a million of these little brown bags. I can just pull this out of my pocket, check it out, throw it over my shoulder like a backpack, and that's sturdy enough. I mean, this has got metal brackets in it. This is sturdy enough to carry my knickknacks when I'm in Germany." And I said, I turned to Brian, I said, "We just should have gone to the Apple store and asked for 5 bags."
He would have been just happy.
So, I'm glad everyone had a good Father's Day.
Yeah. I'm happy to hear about your father's Apple bag.
Yeah. We took... Shut up.
I did not even see that joke. God. Oh God, that caught me off guard.
Nice. Always good. Jeez.
I'm so easy. That was such an easy joke, Fred. I love it.
I'm not going to. Even.
Oh, God. Oh, hey, I'm sorry. I derailed it by laughing that long at that joke.
I'm going to have to play this back. I think I missed the joke.
Don't go over it again. I'll start laughing again.
We took my dad and my surrogate grandfather out to a restaurant here in Dallas called Bone Daddy's House of Smoke, which is essentially Hooters, but it's barbecue instead of wings. And we told Hans, who's 84, that we had a great place taken for dinner because he would really enjoy the scenery. And, man, he walked in and he was like, "Oh, yeah, the scenery, I get it." And I've never seen a man charm women quicker than that 84-year-old man. That was it was shockingly amazing. And, yeah, and he can put down the cheese stuffed peppers, too. Anyway. You got a clever joke for that one, Brad? Nope, didn't think so. Okay, Orphan Works. So I spent a lot of my weekend researching copyright law. And by the end of it, the biggest thing I came away with was that I'm behind in being current. The good news is that pretty much everyone is behind in being current, but there's a lot to it. So the way I understand it, you guys correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, is that the way the current copyright law works right now is that the minute you create something, the minute it becomes a fixed work, you own your copyright, whether you register it officially with the Library of Congress or not. You're protected from people infringing upon it. The difference between having your work registered and not registered is the amount of damages you can recover should someone infringe on your work. It's basically kind of limits how much you can go after. If your work is not registered officially, the most that you can claim is actual damage and profits, basically the value of your work. Because it's kind of the Copyrights Office way of saying, hey, you know, you didn't register it, so there's really no official way for these people to check, right, to make sure it's not something they're infringing upon. So we have to assume they went by good faith. Certainly you could have registered it with us. It's $35. So you can tell them to stop. They have to stop. You can get the damages and profits from your work, and you can move on. Now, if you've registered it, The Copyright Office acknowledges that the infringer has no excuse. It was registered with the Library of Congress. So now, you can not only just get your fair value and get them to cease and desist, but you can go after statutory damages up to like 30 grand per work, I think, or up to 150 grand per work if you could demonstrate that the infringement was willful. Mm-hmm. And so in that case, the responsibility of payment to sort this whole mess out is on the infringer, okay? That you can even sue them for your legal costs. So that's the way that the copyright law works now. And that's the same, I think it's pretty much similar in international law. So so far, am I good? Am I right so far? Okay. So now what is...
The only thing that I would delineate alongside that is that there is it's not a huge level of protection as far as I understand it, but the U.S. copyright system assumes that you have copyright as soon as you create something, but the addition of the declaration of copyright next to the work is at least in part, if I remember correctly, in some court cases has been more a better defensive posture for the copyright holder than had they not put it on there, because it's a public acclamation, even if it's not registered, it's a public acclamation that yes, I'm aware of and hold the copyrights to this piece of art. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And should it come to court, you stand on less of a ground if you've stolen the copyrighted work of something that had the demarcation copyright Brad Geiger 2008 all rights reserved on it, even if it wasn't registered. Because the very fact that you've seen that and still stolen from it, I think the damages can be a little bit higher. I think.
Yeah, no, that's right, because you can demonstrate that the infringement was willful.
Right. Exactly. With an accidental, yeah.
So, I mean, that's the way that it is now. So, you know, definitely you want to keep in the loop about what's happening with this Orphan Works bill we're going to talk about. But the way that things stand now, consult a lawyer, consult the Library of Congress website. It's very cheap to register copyrights. So I think it's like $35, and from what I understand from the lawyer I consulted with, it's a pretty easy process. There are many, many different ways you can super cover yourself, many different ways you can register. For example, is it a collected works? Is it a single work? Is it a book? I could take all 10 years of my strip and submit it as a collection. I could take one character and submit it as a character. So there's a great deal of leeway in how detailed you can get, you know, and how much you want to spend, but that's the way it works now. So,
well, and can I ask you a question in light of the research you've been doing?
Yeah.
Let's say you've got a skull in most every strip, or let's say the assorted cast that is PvP, one or more of them appear in any individual strip.
Sure.
Obviously, you're not going to copyright what I'm assuming is probably over 5,000 strips now, but are you on a safer leg having copyrighted Skull and Cole and Brent and, you know, like the fact that their appearance in the strip, does that add to the copyrighted value of a strip that in and of itself wasn't copyrighted or registered?
The way that it's being explained to me by the lawyer I consulted with was that so much of it is up for interpretation that your best course of action is every year you re-register your copyrights. The reason for that is, you know, if you take a look at the way Skull looked in 1998 and compare it to the way Skull looks now, they could very well be very different characters. Now, we all know that it's the same character and my art's evolved, but a judge who doesn't understand that might look at me in a case and I'm saying this person stole my character, and he's saying, well, this, I'm looking at your website, this is what this character looks like, and this image here is similar but not very close. And, you know,
I do remember that in my Mattel days as a creative at Mattel, the IP attorneys always used to tell us that if the difference is greater than 30%, that you're in trouble.
Sure.
So, for example, if how you quantify that is completely subjective in a court case, obviously, but that's kind of why Steamboat Willie Mickey will come up for free copyright use before what we associate as modern Mickey will.
Correct, because those copyrights of the modern Mickey are more current, more recent.
Right. And it's a much different-looking mouse, you know.
I remember back when Ghostbusters first came out, because there was a lot of buzz from my friends about that movie. I was of the right age at the right time. That was the first movie we really started quoting, and that was really the first movie that made us realize that pop culture was important to us. And we saw in the news that the Harvey Corporation, Harvey Comics, was suing that movie because they felt the ghost in their logo looked too much like the Harvey Comics ghosts from Casper, the bad ghosts. The judge ruled that there's only a certain number of ways you can draw a ghost, and Ghostbusters won. They didn't have to pay. So, you know, I mean, all of that's up for interpretation. So what I could easily do, I don't have to register every strip I drew in 1998, but I could take a collection of those strips that covers my creative property of the year. You know, I find a collection of strips that basically covers all the important characters, register that. Take the next year, register that. Take the next year, register that. So like I said, depending on how much you want to make out of it, how much you want to risk, how much you want to spend, you can do as much as you want to cover as much as your ass as possible. And that's why I never really, that's one thing I never really understood, was that if I own Skull in 1998 and I own Skull in 2008, what does it matter what year I copyrighted it? I own it. And that's because things change. You know, the image changes, the way you draw them changes, the essence of the character changes, and that's all up. It's all very subjective. So that's why they do it. That's why when you buy a book that was printed in the 60s, it's copyrighted for every year, you know, from then till now. So let's, anyways, let's move on and discuss what orphan works are. The phrase orphan works refers to works that are where you can't find the copyright holder. The copyright holder is unknown. It's almost impossible to find the copyright holder. This often, for the most part, includes historical works. The reason why the Copyright Office has sought to make these works available is for cultural institutions, people that we as a culture entrust to not take advantage of commercially. For example, museums and documentary filmmakers, libraries, things like that. So they're looking to make these works available to those institutions without the fear of being sued for infringements. What I'm being told is that that is very possible to do without also opening it up for commercial abuse to very easily take place. And the current orphan works bill that's in front of the House and the Senate is way, way overblown, way too open, and in fact leaves way too many doors open for people that could commercially abuse the Orphan Works Act and essentially claim that any work is an orphan work. And so, I mean, there's details of this bill that just get more frightening as you read down it. So the bill makes it legal for anyone desiring to use a copyrighted work for any purpose to go ahead and use it without a license, so long as they have made a good faith, reasonably diligent search to locate the copyright owner.
And that's open to interpretation.
That's the biggest problem right now, yes. The biggest problem right now is the biggest question being asked is, what the hell does that mean? What is a good faith, reasonably diligent search?
It's ambiguous as can be.
It's very ambiguous. Now, that work of the use of that orphan work is free unless the copyright owner comes forward. But even in the case of the copyright owner coming forward, now with this new bill, no matter what, you can only claim or sue in order to claim normal license fee. There's no recourse for additional damages, attorney's fees, statutory damages, whether you've registered the copyright with the Library of Congress or not. It doesn't matter.
Or even as an extension of that, damage to the brand. So, for example, if Skull is used in something else, Scott could claim after after an Orphan Works lawsuit, well, okay, Skull does belong to Scott, so we have to pay him what someone would normally pay to use Skull. So that fee would be determined and then paid. But the problem is, Scott's brand of Skull is much larger and much harder to quantify than any individual use of Skull.
Could have been damn right. Maybe the guy used it in an image that was very negative. You know, maybe it was used for something awful, like any number of things.
Like urinating on a car symbol.
Exactly.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you. Exactly.
Right, and at this point, for someone, what would normally be considered the casual observer would start to conflate it as being one and of the same brand, and where normally someone could sue based on damage to the brand or damage to the image or damage to future profits, Scott would not be able to do that.
Here's the scariest part, guys. Not only – maybe we could survive not being able to sue for statutory damages and damage to the brand. At least we get them to stop using the work – in the wrong way, right? Wrong. With this bill, once you've discovered someone infringing on your copyright and you prove that you have it registered and they pay you the fair value of your work, the Copyright Office will consider the matter closed. And they can continue to use that image in any way they see fit because they paid the fair market value for it and they made a good faith search. So, sorry, kid. Enjoy skull pissing on the Ford logo.
And it gets worse. Now this is the part where it really starts to scare me, because this is where you see big business really wetting their lips and licking their chops, and that is the part about the image repositories, where supposedly to protect yourself for a fee you can upload your image to this depository, where in the reading I've been doing they've got this am I going too far?
That's the next thing. Let me talk to this next. So,
okay.
You know, this seems all very outrageous. So the big question is, you know, how in the world under this new law can anyone protect their work? The Copyright Office says, don't worry about it. We've thought of that. The bill calls for the Copyright Office to certify two separate privately run organizations that would have databases that would be searchable via the public, via the internet. So
they're privately run, so they've got to make a profit. Right?
All you have to – well, they don't necessarily have to, but there's nothing that says they don't. They can't. Okay. So all you have to do is make sure you register everything you've ever created that you want protected with these registries. And then once that's done, then you're protected. But it still, I don't think, allows you at that point to pursue statutory damages. I think at that point, all it does is allow you to get them to stop. The big fear here is that it's going to become financially impossible for people to protect their work. You know, these registries are going to be privately run. There's nothing says they can't be for profit. Companies like Google, companies like Yahoo, Microsoft, I mean, anyone with an infrastructure to do this is going to greatly benefit from this database in which everyone that's a creator is going to upload their movies, their screenplays, their scripts, their cartoons, everything into this huge database and possibly be charged for it. And then people might be charged to check the registry. I mean, it's a huge financial opportunity.
Course, if it's a web-based registry, you can run ads on all that.
Right.
You could make money just on the ads. But what I heard, I think the NCS, National Cartoonist Society, has sent around a little something about it. And what I read on that one is that they were batting around the idea of like $10 per upload. Now, that's not confirmed. That's rumor. Nothing's set in stone. But just think about that for a second. If it was something, even something that seems nominal, $10 per upload, you'd go broke just trying to protect yourself.
Oh, it's impossible. It's impossible.
And there's nothing saying that once your image is in this repository of images, what I was reading a little while ago, they're kind of relying on some kind of image recognition software to help find duplicate images to see if there's any infringement, but that hasn't even been really solidified yet.
Interesting
so
fact.
You can have your image in the depository and still get screwed.
Yeah. Interesting fact that I found when researching this was that within 2 weeks of the issuance of the Orphan Works report in 2006, nearly all of the domain names associated with Orphan Works were registered by commercial interests. It just seems like there is a huge profit-taking that's going to result from the legislation. And that commercial archives will then be able to harvest anything that's been declared an orphan work, registered as their own copyright, and make money off of the work of you and your colleagues. I mean, the implications are really scary, and that's why so many people are fighting it. It's why you're seeing your email light up about this. Apparently, the international law forbids coerced registration as a condition of protecting the copyright. So this whole concept of the government requiring you to use a private registry, this is restricted. This is very unique to the United States. No one else internationally does this. So this is just a backwards thought here. What we're also seeing is that a lot of the major art and photography associations, the managers of the associations, are supporting the bill. And the thought behind that is that they feel they're going to be able to operate some of the registries and make a lot of money.
So you're saying like what was traditionally like the Fraternal Organization of Photographers is now thinking they're going to run a photography registration site? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like I guess the thought is that some of these artistic associations that are supporting the bill, they actually have plans to take advantage of running to the registries.
Right.
Seeing a lot of heat come from photography circles about this, a lot more than classical art circles, painters and cartoonists and graphic designers. This is a huge talking point in photography circles right now. You know, because most of the time a photograph doesn't have copyright information on it. I mean, it's just gonna be a nightmare for photographers. I'm sorry, Phil. I was interrupting somebody a second ago, I think.
No, I think you're doing fine.
No, I think I had my only point was the registration by guilds and that sort of thing. I mean, the idea of money aside, let's assume, for example, that the law by some addendum says that the registration has to be free. The trickier thing is just the mere circumlocutious route for an average or even an amateur artist to have to copyright their work. And by that I mean, just by way of historical example, think of the famous smiley face from the 70s, you know, the yellow face with the curled lip and the two dots, and how many times that has been used and misused without the artist ever having been paid.
Correct.
So for all intents and purposes, let's say that was that artist's single and only important work that he ever did in his life, which happens more often than we like to think, you know, that somebody creates one great idea and that was it, you know. But let's say there's sort of an amateur artist out there who is not familiar with the ins and outs of daily copyright registration that an artist should be doing, comes up with what, by all rights and standards, is a brilliant idea in any human valuation of what is brilliant. And all these companies pounce on it because this sweet, naive kid of 18 didn't have the foresight or the knowledge to register it on the site, you know? So what I'm saying is the accidental stroke of brilliance is immediately pounced upon just by virtue of the fact that this person wasn't considering what traditionally would have been their natural copyright to be, you know, up for grabs.
Yeah.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, we're looking at this as professionals saying, oh my God, I have 4,000 Sheldon cartoons. How the hell am I going to upload all these to what it will probably be an eventual online portal? And we're overlooking the fact that there are accidental geniuses out there that create one piece or two pieces or 10 pieces of art that are so seminal. You know, another one you could think of would be that Love graphic design. Have you ever seen that, where the L-O is stacked over the V-E?
Yes, yeah,
that's
yes.
That's based on a sculpture that's here in Philadelphia at Love Park.
Right, and that one single graphic design and sculpture has been reiterated on T-shirts, on bags, on And so that's what I'm saying. I'm thinking of the single creative genius that's been recreated in 10,000 monetization.
Oops. Dave?
Did we lose him?
We might have lost him a second.
Sure that.
Oh, you know, Dave, we lost you for just a second.
Oh, no, really?
Well, right after the word monetization, I think.
Oh, sorry. Well, what I'm getting at is, as professionals, let's say this happens. We will learn and we will adapt and we'll get into the program of having to register all of our individual sketches and drawings and final works and animations and all the things that we do. But a fear of mine, too, is the accidental genius that creates one thing that's a single seminal piece of art that gets reiterated 10,000 times across our culture, and they never find any remuneration for it just because they didn't know to register it, just because they didn't know that whole process existed or had to be gone through, you know? I mean, one of the beauties of our traditional copyright system was that the accidental genius was still protected just by virtue of the fact of his or her creation, you know?
Exactly. So have we, Scott, have we covered the main points on why we feel that this is a bad bill?
There's also one point that I thought of, saw mentioned somewhere, that I also want to bring up.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that you're able to demand any kind of amount of money for your work, when it comes to, we talk a lot about doing it yourself, but I think all three of us, four of us when Chris is here, can agree that, you know, eventually you're going to have to deal with somebody, a publisher, a vendor. You know, for me, I got to put my animations on the Xbox Live service. I was able to get Blind Ferret. Even doing it yourself here with Blind Ferret. You know, all of these contracts, all of these partnerships, the key to it is that you can guarantee to this corporation that can help you out that you are granting them the exclusive rights to your work for use in this. This bill eliminates that ability. There's nothing you can do to guarantee that you are giving any organization exclusive rights to your license. If the toy company approached Brad and said, I would like to make Evil Inc. toys for a year, we want to purchase your license to make toys for a year, and you felt it was a good deal, it's going to last a year, your rights revert to you back for the year, you're going to get a lot less because you can't guarantee those exclusive rights anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of shitty. I mean, you know, that's where the big money comes in. You know, is when you license things and when you get to work with a larger corporation where even if you've worked it out to where you're protected for your rights, I mean, you guys have no idea what hoops we had to jump through with Xbox to guarantee them that we were giving them the exclusive rights to our work and that we had them, that they were, you know, they were registered, that they had permission, that no one else was going to use it, and that, you know, no one was going to sue them for saying, hey, Scott didn't make Skull, I made Skull, and we're going to sue you now.
Right.
I mean...
Well, that's just it. Somebody could... there's so many variables here, but somebody could very well, under this Orphan Works idea, do a slightly modified Skull, upload that, and claim that they themselves are the orphan, and try to claim rights to what you had rightfully produced.
Mm.
You know what I mean? One-upsmanship, and I'm the orphan, no, I'm the orphaned type of thing.
Yeah. Who knows what the hell's going
to
happen?
We can all agree, then, that this bill is an absolute boon to artists. I mean, this is the best thing coming down the pipe for us.
It's certainly a frightening thing.
So let's
what we don't realize is how close this thing got to being passed.
Oh, God, I'm sorry. I'm talking all over everybody. I apologize.
Go ahead, Scott.
No, from my understanding, it very recently almost got passed in the middle of the night, attached on the back of something else. And I know the National Cartoonist Society and their legal counsel and a lot of other organizations really went on the attack to make sure that that it got stopped. From what I'm hearing now, there are so many different factions fighting over this right now, that it's almost like a ball that's up in the air. It's bouncing, and nobody knows what side it's going to land on. We don't know which way to fight at this point. It's I heard it described as almost like a feudal Europe at this point.
Lose you?
No, 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 no. No, you didn't lose me. Hello?
Hello?
Did I lose you?
It's breaking up a little bit on my end.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, no, no. That's Skype. I mean, what can you do?
Hey. At least they'll hear it, right? Because it's recording my stuff. Oh, we just lost Brad.
Oh, we did just lose Brad. Damn it.
Let me bring him back in. We're almost wrapping it up here.
This podcast is brought to you by Skype. Skype, makers of fine VoIP software.
What if the people pushing this bill are trying to stop us right now? They'll know how they would know we were talking about it, but...
While we're bringing Brad back in, and this is not a question that you're going to know the answer to, Scott, because I don't even know if the general public knows the answer to it. But you can understand why the YouTubes of the world, the Googles, the Yahoos, the MSNs, the Facebooks of the world, the MySpaces of the world, are very content with an Orphan Works passing, because it removes it takes a lot of the onus off of them in litigation over IP or copyrights. But what I'm left flabbergasted is there are gigantic IP companies out there that should be fighting this, and it's astounding to me that your Hanna-Barbera's, your Warner Brothers, your Disney's, your Pixar's, your Mattel's, your Hasbro's aren't fighting this.
I really don't understand that at all. The only thing that I can think of, there are a million different conspiracy theories that I've read online and researching this. I mean, you've got the wackos writing in notepads a million times that Disney's behind it. I think the bottom line it comes to that when you're talking about the big boys, I think they are so protected, they are so established, and they have so much money. I don't think they're in a position to be damaged as much as the middleman or the middle-sized guy or the little guy.
But having said that, though, they're just knowing my own experience with Mattel. Mattel has more registered trademarks than any other company in the United States. They have something like 5,000, 6,000 registered trademarks. But the administration of all those trademarks is a huge pain in the ass. So can you imagine if for every drawing that Mattel produces in their offices, which is, I can guarantee, among the 3,000 artists in Mattel's design center, there's got to be at least 100,000, if not more, drawings a year. That's a huge amount of administration for their already deluge legal team. So I can't see why it would behoove them at all to let this go.
Yeah, I don't know. I would love to take that as a sign that maybe these companies just are not afraid, after consulting their legal team, that this would ever pass. But, yeah, I have no idea. That was one of the questions I want to ask. I'd love to get a lawyer on here to talk to us about it. Maybe we could get some advice from somebody. That is a question I cannot answer.
And, even the big boys, I don't want to argue the point too much, but
I think it's a valid question, though, Dave.
Let's talk about.
Let's get Brad back in here. Hey, Brad.
Brad, back in the house.
Yes.
The question that we were discussing while you were gone, right after we discussed how hot your wife was, is why aren't any of the larger corporations that certainly have a lot to lose fighting this? Like, why have we not heard from Disney about it? Why have we not heard from Hanna-Barbera, Pixar, the networks? We're trying to divine why we've not heard much from them.
I mean, I think the answer to that one is that they've all got what's that? Are you setting me up?
No, I'm not. No.
They've all got big lawyers. I mean, they know that if something happens, I mean, nobody can believably swipe Mickey Mouse. Not only do they have big lawyers, but they've got everybody's eyes on their side. So between those two things, everybody knows Fred Flintstone is Hanna-Barbera. There's no way to swipe him. But the people who are going to get hurt by this are the middle guys and the little guys.
Yeah, but I'm not even convinced that the big guys wouldn't get hurt by this, because there's so much. Let's say you're a creative company that's been around for 30 or 40 years. Well, if I'm in charge of a brand, like let's say I walk in and I'm now a senior creative on Hanna-Barbera, there might be characters from the 60s and 70s that I don't even remember that are there could be turned into gold mines somehow somewhere, you know.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps, and
some of these. Oh, go ahead.
No, I think perhaps, but I just think that even if that does happen, they've got such extensive access to legal protection that they can easily fight it off.
Hmm.
Yeah, but you're assuming that companies like to fight off and like to jump into copyright disputes. I mean, no one wants that. No one wants more administration and more. Well, I say that, but lawyers love to protect their own jobs, and if it creates more jobs for them,
well, what if they've already crunched the bean counters have already crunched the numbers, and it's going to cost more just to deal with it than it is to fight it.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, didn't Disney already? Disney's already had this fight with the public domain, the pushers of the public domain. They got their copyrights extended, to an additional 75 years, correct?
The Sonny Bono Mickey Mouse Protection Act, wasn't it? Yeah.
Maybe this. I don't know. Listen, if I make any suppositions, it's going to sound like I got a conspiracy theory going, you know? I mean, maybe Disney knows that they got this, so they're not going to fight the other thing. I don't know. I really don't understand the people behind pushing the bill. I mean, obviously it's a lobbyist thing, right? Someone's lobbied a senator to push it. Who is pushing for the bill?
Obviously people who want to get into the image registration business are pushing this. Everybody that registered those Orphan Works websites, and you know the rumor, and I have to classify this as rumor because I haven't seen anything direct about it, but there's a huge rumor going around that Google is one of the big people behind this.
Yeah, no, I've heard that too.
They stand to make a ton of money through this.
Yeah, I was going to say, even if you just apply basic logic to it, you think to yourself, okay, what's changed in the last 10 years in terms of copyrights and the sharing of images and music and video files? Well, internet and high-speed downloading. Well, who are the companies that would benefit best from an Orphan Works Act in light of increased use of copyrighted work over the internet? Well, it would be Google, it would be Yahoo, it would be MSN, it would be YouTube, it would be MySpace, it would be Facebook. You know, it would be every company that up until this point has had to somewhat protect itself from the idea that they are stealing or using or parlaying their own profit by the use of other people's copyright. So, I mean, it's pretty clear. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't pay attention to rumors, if you just apply a little basic business logic to it, who wins from this? Well, it's going to be companies that are right now parlaying copyright over their electronic systems, you know.
So the question becomes, what do we do?
Right.
Well, I asked Stu Rees what to do. Stu Rees is a lawyer that is counsel for the NCS because he was big in pushing for this. I asked him, what can I do? He appreciated the call. He told me he would keep me in the loop. He said, right now there's not a clear course of action. Apparently the bill was really close to being passed. They stopped it. Now the ball's kind of up in the air. Nobody knows where it's landing. But once there's a course of action, he'll advise us on how we can advise others, I guess. Because, again, I didn't know who to talk to. I'm getting so many emails with different opinions about it, pushing me to encourage my readers to do different things. I don't want to encourage someone to do something that's going to turn out to be accidentally detrimental. So one of the things that I found, and God, I've been so scatterbrained today that I can't find exactly where that was located, but there was a link to form letters that people could send to their senator. I'm a congressman. I'm not big on form letters. I feel you should send a personal letter. I think form letters are going to be ignored. But there was actually a form letter for humor cartoonists, and it basically said the same thing: where I oppose the Orphan Works Act. The Orphan Works Act will, you know, I'm opposed to it. And it listed four reasons why humor cartoons would be opposed to it. Reason one, undermines the 1976 Copyright Act, which makes it impossible for me as a cartoonist to protect my work. Two, it will become a huge financial burden to keep my rights. I'll be forced to register with great expense, time, and money to digitize and register all of my cartoons on a commercially run database. Three, it eliminates my ability to sue for statutory damages, which is currently the only tool the law provides to protect my work. And four, it will allow infringers to create derivative works from my original illustration, despite my objecting and profit from it. And so, I think at this point the best thing everybody can do is be aware. For God's sakes, register your copyrights. And
while you can.
And I think Stu even told me that once he gets his head above water, he's even going to prepare. He's thinking about preparing some how-tos for people in the case that it does pass. I lost this information. I had a little cheat sheet here I'd taken notes on, but I believe that if the bill is passed, it doesn't go into effect until 2011, 2012 or something. So,
and as a matter, I seem to remember reading 2013, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it's not
while you're on the thing there, Scott. Just on, in light of the idea of a form letter, there's a pretty good one that I sent in to my two senators, located at this URL, capwiz.com. That's capwiz.com/illustratorspartnership. And
Dave. This is what I found.
We'll put that up on the Half-Pixel forum somewhere as well. But once again, it's capwiz.com/illustratorspartnership. And I've sent that off to I'm in California, so I sent it to Senator Feinstein and Senator Boxer and got a letter back from both. And the bill, by the way, is S-2913, the Sean Bentley Orphan Works Act of 2008. And both of them had very – it was interesting to see, and it's not – maybe it's not worth sharing over to read the whole letter. But it's enough to say that both of them were very cagey about the way they wrote it, because it's like, oh, I understand your concerns. You know, our artists and the incentive to produce work in the United States is vital to our country and our economy and our culture. However, having said that, I'm going to vote for the bill. You know? that's sort of the way
yeah,
it's
mean,
what's essential for me is money, and I'm getting a lot to push this.
Let
so,
me say, there's a lot of really rich lobbyists that are throwing money towards my next campaign.
And this thing at the URL is one of those deals that you don't even need to know who your representative is. You can just plug in your zip code, and it'll give you the right people right off the bat. Am I right about that?
Yeah, and you know what's great about living in Texas is that any time a bill rears its head, whether it's net neutrality, whether it's orphan works, whether it's just whether or not a handsome man can just smack a kiss right in the lips of another handsome man, it's always someone from the great state of Texas sponsoring these bills. So my actions are moot. I think this Bentley guy is from here, right?
Sean Bentley.
I think you may be right.
Thank you, Texas.
I've got to go back and look. That sure does sound familiar. But you know, I want to circle back to one thing you said, and I've got a little bit different viewpoint on it.
Oh, thank God! Original sponsor Patrick Leahy, Democrat,
Vermont.
Yeah.
There's two Democrats and two Republicans.
Shame on you, Vermont.
one of the guys is from Michigan, a Democrat from Michigan. And then there's two Republicans.
And the
but what I wanted to say was, you said you weren't that crazy about the idea of having a form letter. And there's one good thing about a form letter. If you're a senator and you see a bunch of the same letters coming across your desk, speaking with the same voice, if you will, that tells you one thing and one thing only besides these people are against it. These people are also organized. And if they're organized, there's a good chance that if you piss them off, they might just organize themselves to try and get you unelected next time you run. So
yeah.
There's actually something kind of nice about a form letter. It speaks with the same voice. It says we are all on the same mind on this thing.
Well, I listen. If the choice is a form letter or nothing, send the form letter. You know, we definitely should take some action. But as far as us guys trying to leverage our readership, maybe to push stuff, I think this CapWiz thing right now is one thing I feel comfortable pushing, because I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. I feel a little punch drunk from having read what I've already read.
Oh, and speaking of CapWiz, they just had a little thing. One of the guys is from Texas, Lamar Smith. Of the four co-sponsors, it's Howard Berman, D, California, John Conyers, D, Michigan, Howard Coble, R, North Carolina, and Lamar Smith, R, Texas.
Yeah.
You know what's very interesting about that to me? And you guys can feel free to correct me if you think I'm wrong. But very few of those I would think of as content-rich states.
Listen,
no, I don't,
young
I
man,
don't see, no,
I don't know
I mean
if you're familiar
before
with
you say,
the...
before you say anything about Texas, what I mean by that is I don't see a huge number of content creating, I should have said, companies coming out of Texas or North Carolina or, you know what I mean? It's not...
Yeah, no, you think of all the creative center of the world. It's like New York, California, it's the Northwest, Seattle, right? You know? I mean, I guess Disney's in Florida, but... I mean, like, the big cultural centers are California, New York, right? That's where all the artists are.
You don't see Pixar, Hanna-Barbera setting up works in North Carolina. But I just find that interesting that, you know, you definitely vote who your constituency is, and it's interesting that the four sponsors are all from fairly hugely artist producing states. And by having said that, I'm going to get all sorts of emails from North Carolina. All right, now, hold on a second. I'm North Carolina. We got a whole bunch out of here in North Carolina. Oh, here's my mint julep. Hold on a second. Oh, all right, now, take my draw. That's the worst North Carolina accent, by the way. I cannot do North Carolina to save my life. My
if
North Carolina sounds
Louisiana,
like my Texas.
You would have been right on by Georgia. But you know
Louisiana.
What? The mint julep saves it. When you got to the mint julep, I was on your side.
You know what? Just on a side note, what is in a mint julep? I was arguing with somebody about that last night.
What is in a mint julep?
I've never heard of the phrase to help answer the question.
You know what? I'm online. I'm going to look it up. Mint, you guys keep talking. I'm going to look up mint julep. Because at Webcomics Weekly, we're all about letting people know the important things of life here. Southern mint julep. You crush mint leaves and sugar. So here we go. You get four sprigs of fresh mint leaves, one tablespoon sugar, and 1.5 jiggers of bourbon whiskey. What's a jigger? Now I got to look up jiggers. I hate
I'm
these.
Not touching.
Every question requires another question.
You know those little hourglass-shaped measuring cups?
That's what it is.
With martini sets and stuff.
Yeah,
a jigger is any breast size over a C cup that... Oh, wait. I'm looking up something completely different. That's a jiggle. I apologize.
Yep.
I apologize.
You're right, Brad. A traditional jigger is a double-sided device with a large measure on one end and a smaller one on the other. Well, you can guess who doesn't drink very much. That's me. All right.
And I'm labeled as the drunk of the group.
And now that I've successfully ensured that I will get a death threat from North Carolina, let's wrap it up here.
Let's wrap it up because
and let's make a promise to our listeners as this thing goes forward with the orphan bill. This is important enough that we are going to keep on top of it. And as things go on, you can count on us to alert you to it and to do our best to give you guys some ways that you can get active as a community to hopefully stand in the way of this thing.
Thank you, Scott, by the way, for doing all the research this weekend.
No problem. It was one of those things where I woke up Saturday morning and my first thought was, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I can't post that podcast. I think Brad's a... I called Brad, left him a message, and said, I did a lot of research. I talked to some people. I think I understand this Orphan Works Act better now. You're right. It's really scary. We need to re-talk about it. And when he called me back, he said, that was the last phone call I expected to get today.
Well, no, there were other reasons I said that, too. But we won't get into that.
Wait a minute. I don't know what that means. What does that mean, Brad?
I'll tell you after the podcast.
What? What was just said? What the hell was just said?
I think that you owe him money. I'm not sure what just happened.
No. I'll explain after the podcast. Number one, I'm from the Midwest. I never expect to be right about anything.
Oh.